I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A terrific new book out, one that will make a handsome addition to any coffee table, is Vancouver in the 70s, Photos from a Decade that Changed the City. It's a marvelous book featuring over 100 photographs from the 1970s that show the era, the people, the fashions, the social mores that defined this town. The photos are from the Vancouver Sun's archives, taken by the award-winning photographers who chronicled a fast-changing city. Kate Bird, who for 25 years was a librarian at the Sun and who helped manage the photograph collection there, is the author of this book and joins me now. I'll ask her about how this collection came about and how she decided on the photos therein. We'll also reflect on the news photography of today and its future in the fast-changing world of media today. This new book is published by Greystone. Get it. It's a wonderful view onto the city told through such lively photographs. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Kate Bird. Ms. Bird, good morning.
Thank you.
So that's the thing that I, in going through the book, just how lively the photographs are. And you capture so much, a photographer captures so much in an image, probably a lot more than, say, a video clip.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, do you find yourself looking at these things and really feeling like you're in these moments? Because younger than mm-hmm. I wasn't born when all this stuff was shot. You do feel almost a part of it. I mean, it's a part of the city's history, I guess, right? So it's my history too, right?
It is, and I you know, the photographers shot over 4,000 assignments every year, covering every range of topic that the newspaper captures: news, crime, accidents, business, industry, arts, entertainment, sports, all these different, so they, this broad range of activity in the city, and I think that it really brings the city to life to cover this broad range. It's not a particular thing that's covered in, you know, an individual's point of view. It's more this collective view that you get.
Yeah, and you don't have to be from that era, but, you know, the city still looks familiar. I mean, as much as we talk about how it's changing,
mm-hmm.
you go through the book, and then there's near the end of the book, there's that memorial for the firefighter who
right.
died. And that corner, other than the signs at the Century Plaza Hotel, is still the same. You've got
it
St.
Is.
Paul's, you have Century Plaza, and you have that church on the corner, St.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew's Wesley. What's it like to go back and look at all these photos? Because, I mean, you've lived in Vancouver. Have you lived in Vancouver your whole life?
Since the 70s.
Oh, since
no.
the 70s. So, mm-hmm. yeah, so you've seen a good chunk of
yeah.
the city's history and how it's progressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing, you know, I mean, part of the premise was the book was about the decade that Vancouver grew up. And in the early, when you look at the photos of the skyline of Vancouver in the early 70s, there's one or two from 71. It's, you know, it's hardly got any high buildings. There's a Hotel Vancouver and the Marine Building and the Sun Tower and a few others. Really, it's kind of remarkable. By the end of the 70s, there was so much building that went on, so much infrastructure changes in that decade. The Granville Mall went in, Pacific Center Mall and Eaton's, the whole Robson Square Courthouse project, the Sears Tower, the CBC Building, the Museum of Anthropology, and loads of the towers downtown Bentall Center and everything. By the, there was a forest of cranes in the late 70s in the city, and by the end of the city, the skyline was dramatically changed with so much building.
I guess the city's always had cranes in the skyline.
Yeah,
hasn't it?
I know.
Yeah.
It's very much as it is today, and you know, a lot of fights over heritage, and there's protests against apartment heights in Kitsilano and tearing down of heritage buildings, and that was all active then as well.
So a lot hasn't changed.
Yes, exactly.
There's something about news photography that really captures the moment, and it, I guess it's very different than, say, the cell phones that we have, and because I know some newspapers in North America have started to rely on, say, reporters or even citizens taking photos. It's different equipment altogether as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and it's true at the Sun and Province now. Reporters often will take iPhone photos.
Yeah.
And but, you know, they're not photographers. They don't have that eye, and I think that you see that eye in these photographs as in other news photography around the world. I mean, I think that citizen photographs contributed photographs are so vital in many, many parts of the world to cover events that mm-hmm. might not normally be photographed mm-hmm. and have been super valuable in that respect. But you can't replace the eye of a professional photographer and the tradition of photojournalism by just snapping a picture. It's not the same view of the world.
Now, in your years at the Sun, you would work with, say, editors who were looking for photos for certain things. Do you get a sense of what an editor looks for in a photograph that's to be in the paper the next day?
That was an interesting process for me because I was looking at the original envelope of negatives. Yeah. I was thinking, well, I'll find something different. You know, some of the photos have been run in the paper and were quite well known. So I was looking for alternate shots in some cases. And it was so often that the photos, the negatives themselves would be marked. They had a little punch that would be clipped out of the one that had been used. And so often it really was the best photo. Mm. And it's amazing how when I've spoken to people, they say, oh, you know, the 70s, that's when that ferry crash was, or they remember these images very distinctly from so long ago.
Because I'd seen it in the paper.
That's right.
And it's embedded
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, and it's been used since and yeah. over the years, perhaps.
Yeah, and so what's your process in terms of picking it's 149 photos, is that
right? That's
right. In this book, yeah.
Well, we wanted to cover the whole range, as I said before, of what the newspaper covered, every section of the newspaper, news and business and arts and entertainment, sports, the whole gamut of what was shot. And so I started with some images that I just thought were iconic, say that ferry crash mm-hmm. and other key events, political events, the changes in government, both municipally and provincially, certain people that I felt, certain crimes, just to have that representation of all the wealth of material that was covered in the decade. But it was hard to, there were also another category of photographs other than the regular, which are called tour photos. And back in the day, in the 70s, there were over a dozen staff photographers at the Vancouver Sun covering these over 4,000 assignments, as I mentioned before. But there was also something called tour photos. The papers were large, and they played the photographs very large on the pages, mm-hmm. and there was lots of room. So they had tour photos, and that would be photographers would just go out and shoot whatever caught their fancy, and those would be run in the paper. And there's quite a few of those in the book. They're just moments of, a young man peering out of a dry cleaning window, or some people, a family in Chinatown just walking across the street. They weren't tied to a news event, mm-hmm. but they're just the city and what's happening today kind of images.
And how valuable that is today for us to look back at.
It is, absolutely. They're just captured moments, and that's when you really see the photographer's eye at work. Unfortunately, these days, because the paper is so tight, that those kind of the first snow of the year or cherry blossoms in the spring, those photos might not make it into the papers these days.
And so you mentioned a moment ago you'd go back and say, look at the negatives, and you'd see the photo that was run in the mm-hmm. paper, and then you'd see sort of the outtakes, if
that's
you will.
Right.
That's a lot of it's a lot of images for you to have looked. I mean, if there's 150, you probably multiply that.
There were around 400 that were actually scanned.
Yeah.
Those are all in the exhibit that's at the Museum of Vancouver. And then from those, we narrowed it down to Shelley Frelick helped and a few of the people at Greystone Books as well.
Yeah.
And they had a different perspective because they were younger than us and of what would appeal.
Yeah, that's the thing that you when you read this book, you get a sense of what the 70s are like. The fashion, obviously, we see that on the cover of the book. I was asking a friend who was alive in the 70s, if you will, slightly older than I am, how did people in the 70s cope with such long hair and clothing that seemed a lot warmer than it should be for the summer?
I know. Really funny photos. There's one at the back of the book of a group of people walking down the street. It's got that kind of, you know, early 70s gritty feel of Vancouver.
Different kinds of people, too,
yeah,
right?
Different yeah. kinds of people. And that was for what was called, you know, a kind of a fashion shoot that they used to do, was what are people wearing on the street? And,
yeah.
you know, we wouldn't think of that now as a fashion shoot. But yeah. So those were, it was kind of funny to discover that.
Yeah, and you also get a sense of sort of the issues, the social mores. Sex, I mean, the attitudes towards sex. I mean, you have people in tweed and very, with a lot of clothing on the beach protesting nudity, and then you have, you know, nudists.
Yes, there's actually quite a bit. Someone pointed out to me there's a streaker at a concert. There's quite a bit of nudity,
yeah,
actually, in
yeah.
the book. But it was a thing. It was early, especially in the early 70s. By the end of the 70s, that was changing, and into the early 80s, the anti-pornography and, that became a huge
yeah.
issue.
Bernice Girard.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then on to, you know, protests against Red Hot Video and Direct Action and all those activities in the 80s.
And then you also see, you know, the things that we don't see anymore, like Hare Krishna.
I know, that was
folks.
A big thing yeah. at the airport and outside the bay.
Right, downtown, yeah.
And that photo captured by Mark Van Manen of this woman's face, you know, it's just a priceless photo of, you know, shows her feeling about about that.
Yeah. Music is a big part of the book, and I guess the musical acts that came through this town.
Yeah.
I mean, so the Sun would, if say Tina Turner was playing or Burton Cummings, the Sun would send a photographer and then shoot images of the concert. Is that right? And then that would be in the paper the next day as part
yes,
of the review
right.
or whatever?
And yeah. it was a very different access. You know, these days when they go to shoot a concert, they'll have to sign a contract that's 10 pages long
yeah.
and maybe shoot the first 3 songs and then that's it. So back then, and it's in my essay, Glenn Baglow, one of the photographers, would just knock on the door of the Coliseum and say, I'm from the Sun, and they just let him in.
Mm-hmm.
The photos that are in the book, there's a one that's in the show at the Museum of Vancouver as well, of the crowd, and he's actually on the stage with Rod Stewart.
Mm.
So the kind of access, not just to musicians, but politicians, sports people, they weren't managed in the same way, so that the contact between, say, the photographer, sometimes, in fact, they would go and pick them up at the airport if they were arriving in town and then take pictures of them along the way. So the bands in the 70s, there had always been a lot of musical acts come up the West Coast from,
mm-hmm.
But in the 70s, Vancouver really got put on the tour. And so all the big acts came to town, either played at the Commodore, they played at the Coliseum, and sometimes at the Queenie Theater. And also, of course, there was Vancouver's own burgeoning music industry with the Poppy Family and Doug and the Slugs and the Bachman Turner Overdrive, Prism, all Chilliwack, all the bands got
yeah.
also to be really big in their own right.
Yeah, there's a great shot of Harry Rankin walking down the steps of City Hall with Heart.
Yeah.
And I guess musicians don't really do that anymore, go to City Hall and sign the book.
No.
You just spoke to how, I guess, the news is managed, and that's troubling for me as a news consumer. The role of public relations people and communications staff and how, you know, we're not even talking about politics, we're just talking about musical acts.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so we're losing a lot, aren't we, in terms of what could be news or what is news?
Yeah, I think in the early 90s was the first time we got one of these contracts. I believe it was when Janet Jackson came. That's my memory of the first time we had to sign one of these contracts. And basically it meant that they only could run the photos that were taken at the concert with the review.
Mm.
So we weren't allowed to sell reprints to fans or, you know, so their image was very controlled.
Yeah.
yeah. And then after that, everybody started doing that, and to this day, even more so.
Yeah. What's it like for you to look back at the photos? Because I said a moment ago that not a lot has changed. I mean, a lot has changed, but also some stuff is still the same. But when you see things that aren't there anymore, like on the cover of the book, the back and the front cover, the Devonshire Hotel, for example, have readers come up to you and told you about how they feel when they see parts of the city that are gone now?
Yes, I think so. And, you know, somebody was asking what part of the city can you most see how it used to be. And I guess Gastown still has that look, a lot of the building, and even some of the businesses. For instance, Fox and Fluvog is still down there, and the Spaghetti Factory, which was started in the, which opened in the early 70s. So some of those businesses are, you know, they've changed, but the look of it when you walk around there, it's not terribly different.
Yeah, and younger readers, I'm sure, come up to you and have they got questions about what Vancouver was like in the 70s or just well, even think, in terms of the photographs? Even.
I think they're really fascinated by the, you know, my son, for instance, who's 20, about how individualized people's fashion was, whereas, you know, now it's much more standardized, I guess. You know, and someone else was asking me about how individualistic people looked. I mean, in some ways, those were chosen for the book as well. But whereas now it feels to people that they wear often, you know, similar clothing. So that's different. And I think the nudity and the other things jump out at younger people. I think they find it fascinating because there is a whole faction of the young people who are really into the 70s now. And just as when I was maybe in my 20s, I was interested in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah. There are dangers to nostalgia, though, because, I mean, maybe peaceable, more peaceable. But at the same time, you know, you think it's a lot more genteel place, but it was pretty violent through some of the photos also in the book. Yeah, the one image of Pat Lowther, for example, this photo, because I mean, we've all read about her murder in other books and the sort, the image that's in the book appeared in The Sun,
three weeks before
she was murdered, brutally murdered by her husband.
And, you know, Abby Drover's in there. Yeah. So I think part of it is, you know, The Sun, or, you know, the newspaper covered crime.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to have that, not to have it look too, too genteel or too fun-loving or hippies or what. It wasn't about that. It was, you know, it's a gritty port town as well. There was always crime here. And
poverty and all
poverty those, and homelessness and all of those issues, lots of protests. And so we, you know, wanted to show that that's how it really was.
And so there are photos in the book that didn't appear in the paper. Is that right?
Yes, there are.
Yeah. So like that Abby Drover, the thing in the basement which you see where she was for all those months. Would that have been in the paper?
Yeah, that was in the paper.
Yeah, okay. But nowadays you wouldn't see scenes like that, would you, in the paper? Or
I don't think you would have access. Once again, with the police, that, you know, at that time it was to... And we didn't want to show Abby, you know. We just wanted to show about the crime, not so much with her. And
I love the front cover of the book and the back cover. And it's two people walking in front of the Devonshire Hotel. And... were they taken by the same photographer?
No, they were at different times.
Oh, really?
And I was looking for a picture for the cover. Greystone wanted a individual, hopefully, with, you know, on the street, looking like Vancouver. And that was the front cover was shot for once again one of these summer fashions on the street.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we haven't heard from the fellow yet, although we have heard from a number of people that are in the book.
Oh, is that right?
For instance, there's a picture of two boys playing pool.
Oh, the kid holding the other
That's
kid?
That's right,
yeah.
And they got in touch just a few days ago with the son asking for copies of the photo for Christmas.
Really?
And it didn't say anything on the negatives or in the paper about where it was shot, but apparently it was at Oak Ridge, at the Woodwards at Oak Ridge.
I see. So people have, I guess, picked up the book and seen themselves.
That's right.
Yeah. They told you, like, the stories of what the day was like when such and such photo was taken?
Yeah, we've heard from, there's a photo in there of a nude family at Wreck Beach in 1970. Glenn Baglow won the National Newspaper Award for that photo. And many years later, the young girl that is being held by her parents got in touch and told a story about what all happened with them, that they had you know, the two the parents had got together kind of briefly and in and then split up, but she, that photograph was always kind of around, that she knew about it ever since she was young, and she wanted an, another copy of it. So she talked about, you know, her, what her parents were doing now, and so that's kind of a, an iconic son photo. So it was really great to hear the after story about what happened.
So there would be no records in the archive as to who these, some of these people were, or were there?
Not not for the photo, say, on the, it would have been shot just anonymously of, and that was, you know, allowed, and is now too on the street. So it wasn't about that, whereas things like the two boys playing pool, the photographer would have asked for their names because it was kind of a set-up shot.
So you would see, have the names, I guess, on the...
If they would either be on the negatives envelopes that the photographer has submitted, or they would be in the paper, in the newspaper.
And I love the front and back cover, because it looks like they're walking into one into each other at the in front of the Devonshire Hotel. The other thing you do at the end of the book is you you have the names of the photographers who shot the images, and then you use their I guess they're staff photos from the 70s in the back.
That's right.
Yeah.
I know, it's really fun to see them, because in the 1970s there would have been, you know, a bunch of older guys that had been shooting for maybe 40 years by then, and then all the newer crop of photographers. That was interesting as well, because the younger photographers, they would be the ones who would get sent off to you know, rock concerts and things like that, because older guys weren't as keen.
Well, one of them, I guess he shot the either the front or the back cover of Vladimir Karamidzhev.
Right.
I had him on when he published a collection of his photos from before. Fascinating story, because he disappeared for a while. Well, he didn't disappear. He just moved away, and no one really knew where he was. So did you get to some of them are no longer with us, some of these photographers, right?
Right, that's right.
So the ones that are still alive, did you get to talk to them in the process of putting this book together?
Yeah, I asked a number of them different questions. Glenn Baglew has quite a few photographs in the book. He retired some while ago, and he's still in town. I talked to Vlad, and, you know, some of the other photographers, including John Denniston, who was a province photographer later. He worked briefly for The Sun and then went over to the province and also was a photo editor there. And got in touch with all of the people, John Muller, who ended up working for the Toronto Star for a number of years. Other people went on to different, from The Sun to other newspapers across Canada.
Winning awards and becoming quite
well-known. Having
long
careers,
What's a, you mentioned 4,000 assignments a year. So typically, what would be a day for a photographer? I mean,
well, I mean, that's the thing. They would have maybe at least three or four assignments, and drive around town. And if it wasn't a busy day, then this is when this tour photography would kick in. It'd be like the editor would tell them to just go out the door and find a photo.
And these were all staffers.
All staff.
They weren't freelancers.
That's right. Yeah. No, they were all staff and covered 7 days a week from early in the morning till late at night. Yeah. So in the evening covering, you know, entertainment and everything, and also on call. It could be just such a huge variety. Sometimes just a headshot of somebody, or a news event. Sometimes for a big event, say a royal visit or something, just like it would be now, there would be three or four assigned to cover that royal visit, or maybe one of the photographers would cover the whole time for a few weeks.
And then so they would go back with their film. Would they develop it themselves, and then
they often did. They developed it themselves, and but there was also darkroom staff, and then they would often print their own pictures as well. And a lot of these prints, they're beautiful prints done by, you know, real professionals. So they're just still sitting in the files.
And,
the and sometimes they would make them big. They were all competing, of course, to get onto the front page.
So that was always the goal of a photographer. How many?
Absolutely.
How many times you made it the front page?
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
Above.
And you know, back in the 70s, the papers were, you know, really healthy, doing well, and so the pictures, the photo editors would run the photos really big. And one of the photographers, John Mahler, noted that about how the Sun was really great at, if they had a great photo, it'd be huge on the page, like almost covering the front page.
Yeah, we forget, especially some of us who go back to read old articles in the paper online, say on a clipping service or an archive, because they don't include the photo. So we're focused on the writing.
Mm-hmm.
But for the news consumer seeing at the newsstand, I mean, that's really what sold the paper for a lot of people, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there'd be whole photo pages, you know, for instance, with the, you know, a big event, whether it was a strike or the Gastown riot or whatever, they'd have a picture on the front and then a whole photo page inside. The photos were huge, and not just at the Sun or the Province, but all across after, you know, during the Vietnam War and, you know, the influence of Life and Look magazine, the photographer became, you know, key to images. Whereas in the early days of the newspapers, there were hardly any photographs in the newspaper. They were much more secondary, and the photographers were way down the totem pole.
What was typical for your day in terms of your job, working in the archive, working in the library? Say, I mean, you mentioned Leonard Cohen earlier. So the minute that news comes through the newsroom that he's passed on, he's died. You'd be contacted by, say, a reporter for images for tomorrow's paper, say?
Right.
Yeah. That,
and now, of course, you know, back earlier in my career, in the early, you know, 90 or so, it really would be a question of just being able to get one or two photos in the paper. But now with the website, we can actually use more of the older images. So put up a whole photo gallery, say, of Leonard Cohen over the... So that's a big advantage these days on the website, is to the ability to make photo galleries and use a lot more photographs, you know, access a lot more photographs than are in the paper or that we used to be able to show before.
Yeah. The other thing is, I'm reading the book and thinking, because you have, there's a lot in the book as it is, but there must have been more that you wanted to put in.
Oh, so many more.
Yeah.
So many more. And there's quite a few more that are in the exhibit at the Museum of Vancouver, but also there's just many, just so many more, and just in general. It was very hard to pare it down to only 149 images in the end.
And these 149 images that you have chosen that are in this book really do capture the 70s and everything about the 70s and Vancouver, don't they?
I hope so. That was the goal, as I say, to show, you know, not so much a particular point of view, but the whole breadth of all of the things that the newspaper covers, and also highlight, you know, how beautiful the photojournalism was.
Yeah, when the Sun celebrated its 100th anniversary, that would have been a few years ago now.
Right.
I had Shelley on when that book came out. You were quite integral to the research of that book, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And that was trying to, you know, cover a whole century of the Vancouver Sun in the city. So some of the photos were unearthed through that as well, through that process. And through others, I worked with Stephen Hume on Lilies and Fireweed about frontier women of British Columbia.
And in the Fraser Project.
That's right, Project. So some of my work at the Sun and Province would be to do research for reporters, like, you know, regular kind of research, and also the photo research, not just for the daily paper, but for big projects and books and the outside public as well, who are working on books or films.
Well, when you started at the Sun... I guess Pacific Press owned it.
That's right.
Then. Was that 1990?
Yes.
Yeah.
1990.
And so, you got to work with a lot of people that are no longer at the paper.
That's right.
A lot of legendary figures. And so, I mean, when you look back at your career, is there a time that you found personally rewarding or fun, say?
Well, when I got hired, they wanted to take over the management of the negatives collection, which up until then had been handled by the people in the newsrooms. So on the Sun side, there was a woman, Susan, who index the image, the negatives for the sun for 17 years. So it was very consistently done. Mm-hmm. On the province side, it had been done by copy runners and people who worked at night. It was really very higgly-piggly. In fact, there was a one subject heading that was called Bugger If I Know. So anyway, the librarian wanted to take over the management of the negatives and start to record the photo assignments in a computer database in 1990. And so that's why I was hired to start this computer database. So I did that for a few years. Then in 1994, it was the Commonwealth Games in Victoria, and they decided to try out digital cameras for that because it was hard to get the film back from the Commonwealth Games, you know, in time.
Yeah.
And also for shooting sports, they used to go to Canucks game and be like first period, then you had to rush back and in order to get it in the paper with the deadline. So they experimented with digital cameras. And then the next year, in 1995, they were the first, the Sun and Province were the first newspapers in North America to go all digital. So they had these Nikon NC2000 digital cameras. They cost $10,000. And they were like, you know, 4 meg file.
Your phone is probably better off.
Way better. Yeah. So it was a huge learning curve, and so dealing with this digital archive was a big deal in the especially in the first year or two. It was kind of a nightmare.
I had a former owner of the Sun on the program recently, and I asked him if he wanted to own a newspaper again, and he said no. He said that employing journalists was not something he was interested in doing now. But I mean, you know, I guess he owned the paper at the time that you were there, right? So I mean, what was it like in the newsroom with say reporters and columnists and news photographers and
oh, it was pretty. It was really, really fun, especially at the old building at 2250 Granville.
It's on
Street.
South Granville, right?
Yeah, that's right. And we were all on this one big floor. The province was on one side, and the Sun was on one side, and then the library was in the middle. We call it Switzerland. Basically, we did research for both because they were very much competitors.
Yeah.
Very much competitors. And then behind that was the photo lab. And we're all the photographers from both sides, also very competitive, came in, and they, you know, didn't want the others to see what they had shot. I mean, it was, but it was really, really fun.
Yeah.
And people weren't working from home then, so everybody was in the newsroom. It was a really lively place. And they had called the coffee wagon. This woman Juan would come around because people were just tied to their desks. They had quit smoking. It used to be where you could smoke and write at your desk. And some of the writers had a terrible time not being able to smoke while they worked. But when I started in '90, they had quit that. But it was really lively. Now, of course, you know, so many people work at home, and they, you know, and the newsrooms are so tiny, and now they're merged. So, and that competitive thing that they always had was kind of fun to see who would go to the same event and who would come away kind of the winner.
Yeah. So the archive itself, is that still at 200 Granville?
Yes, it is.
And I guess
much of it, and some of it is kept off site.
Yeah.
But there's a huge collection of negatives, as I said, from the period of 1970 till a full run, which is a lot of boxes of negatives, until 1995 when they went all digital. Then there's the digital archive, which is now 20 years old, which has a couple million pictures in it.
Yeah.
Not only ones shot by our photographers, but wire photos and ones scanned from the collection.
Yeah.
And then there's photo files of people, some people like Pierre Trudeau or W.A.C. Bennett have many, many
files. Yeah.
And then also of different subjects as well. So it's a huge collection, and hopefully as time goes on, somebody won't decide to get rid of it.
Yeah.
So part of my goal is to, you know, bring awareness to the collection and value to
it. Yeah. Are you working on another book now?
I am. I'm working on a book that is called City on Edge, a century of photos from the Sun and Province of riots, protests, and strikes.
Yeah, as I said earlier, you think of it as a pretty peaceable town, but I mean,
you think of
hockey games and the riots that broke out at the, you know, two Stanley Cup finals. I mean, beyond that, you know, you think of the labor strife in the 30s and the 40s.
And, oh, absolutely, you know, and race riots,
solidarity in the 80s, and
all,
things like that.
You know, yeah. Goes on and on. And some of the themes that carry on right from the very beginning: land use, Aboriginal land use, and other land use
race.
Development, race, all kinds of human rights of every description, anti-government, both municipal. And provincial and global to occupy. And the whole environmental movement, which, you know, started earlier, and then, of course, Greenpeace started here, and that continues to this day. So I was amazed in looking at that whole, you know, kind of a whole century, over a century, how the themes have continued from all those years.
Well, I can't wait to read that. And because I enjoyed this book and I enjoyed the previous one as well, you've done a great service in giving this back to us as Vancouverites. And
oh, I'm glad that is kind of the goal, and it's really heartening how interested people are, and you know how many people have been to the Museum of Vancouver specifically to see this, and of course to see the other great exhibits at the museum as well that are just. People, that's it's so gratifying that people are so interested in this history of the city. Last night I gave a talk at Book Warehouse, and there was, you know, quite a crowd there, and another talk that I gave at the museum, and so it's just wonderful that all these people, both, you know, young and old, all ages, want to come and hear about the history of the city.
What do you think that says about us? Because I mean, well, Canadians generally are pretty ignorant about our history, but when you see people who are genuinely interested, who want to, you know, see these photographs for themselves. I mean, we are sort of turning the table, aren't we, in terms of our consciousness?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it's, and it's not all kind of nostalgia or it was better then or anything like that, but I think that it's, you know, some people feel like the city is disappearing. But in another way, when you see this, you realize it really isn't. You know, you can look at pictures from the early 70s and think, well, you know, I recognize this as Vancouver. This is not so outside. Things haven't changed that much.
Yeah. And I mean, I look at it, I'm 34, and I understand why the city is what it is today from these photos from the 70s.
Yeah. And, you know, part of the premise of the 70s being a decade when Vancouver grew up, both, you know, in the city and in infrastructure, as I talked about, the actual building and the skyline of the city, but also just growing up as far as, you know, the it was a huge push to immigration. Trudeau, you know, was the first government to make it a multicultural place, and, you know, that is in the photos too. People think of Vancouver, some people feel it was very, you know, white or whatever. You see these pictures of what school groups and other people, and you realize the ethnicity of the population was, you know, similar to how as it is today.
Yeah. So as I said, it's a marvelous service that you've been doing for the city, for us as Vancouverites, as fans of history. Congratulations on this book, and continued good luck with all of your efforts.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for talking to me today.
It was fun for me. The book is called Vancouver in the 70s, Photos from a Decade That Changed the City. The introduction is by Shelley Freilich, and the foreword is by Douglas Copeland. It's published by Greystone. Kate Bird joined me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plato.